And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is our neighbor, Jonathan Howes, who recently retired as Special Assistant to the Chancellor for Community Affairs. He was the longtime director of the UNC Center for Urban and Regional Studies. He's former mayor of Chapel Hill, former secretary of North Carolina's then Department of Environment, Health, and Natural Resources. All that, among other things, Jonathan Howes, that you've done in and for this community. So, welcome to retirement.
Well, DG, it's nice to be with you, and it's nice to be retired, although I have to say that I'm afraid I'm flunking retirement so far.
I bet you are. I bet you are. What's keeping you from being happily and restfully retired?
I'm happily. But, the first thing I had to do was to clean out an office that I had accumulated about 40 years' worth of stuff from all of those offices that you mentioned in your introduction. And it's been fun to go through some of that material and think back on the things that that symbolized and meant. I found, for example, five boxes of stuff that were liberated from my office in the town hall when I served as mayor, and several years before that on the town council. And I started looking at those things, and I said, those are really very interesting, but they ought not to be in my possession. I hope the town has some archives. It turns out that they have a place where they send stuff. Whether they look at it or not, I don't know. But I called the town hall, and those boxes are now in the town archives in the old Chapel Hill Library. I had a call sometime after that from a woman who is trying to revive a discussion that Bill Friday had with the all of the living ex-mayors from Sandy McClamrock up to, at the time, Kevin Foy. And this was something that was done, I guess, last winter. And nothing was ever done with that. It was video taped, and really the expectation was that it would be made available generally, publicly.
I'm just selfish. Can I get a hold of that and put it on this program?
It was an initiative of Kevin Foy, who was the mayor at the time. This was as he was realized that he wasn't going to run again, wasn't going to continue to serve as mayor. And so he thought it would be a good idea to do that. And the interesting thing, I think, is that that group of former mayors, which includes Sandy McClamrock, Joe Nassif, and Rosemary Waldorf, Ken Brown, all of us do see each other from time to time, and we do kind of compare notes on what's going on in town. So we've kind of stayed in touch. And having Bill Friday, the consummate interviewer and, of course, a longtime resident of Chapel Hill, as the interviewer, it really was a pretty interesting
He didn't have to do a lot
program.
Of deep research. He lived through all of that and then knew all of you all personally and was able to.
He did. And the coincidence in all of this is that at Bill Friday's birthday party, which you and I and 1,000 other people attended not so long ago, he asked me about that tape and what was done with it. And I had to say I didn't know, but I tried to find out. And I think it was the next day this woman called from the mayor's office now and said they're trying to get it put together so that it can in some way be put in presentable form. So I'm encouraged that that may happen. And
I'm jealous. I'm going to go. I want to get it for this radio station.
It was nicely done. And of course, Bill did his usual good job of interviewing the people, and he was very informed, of course, about what had gone on in this town over the years that we represented in that group around that table.
Well, you're just you haven't retired. Then you're still working.
No. After getting my office pretty well cleaned out, I had two big projects in mind and some other smaller ones, and I continue to serve on several boards and commissions and the like. And my friend Joe Hackney recently appointed me to the State Health Plan Board of Trustees. So I've got a new responsibility that I hadn't anticipated, but Joe asked me to do it, and I always do what he asked me to do. In any event, the two big projects that I had in mind, one was a kind of a chronicle of the university's development over the most recent 10 years. For me, it began when I came back to UNC at Chancellor Hooker's request after serving as Secretary of Deaner in Raleigh. And he was about to launch a new process to develop a master plan for the campus. And he asked me to chair that, which I did. And it took longer than any of us expected. And unfortunately, Chancellor Hooker wasn't around to see the end of the process. Bill McCoy came in as interim, and then James Meeser came in. And in the end, the Board of Trustees adopted that master plan early in the decade, in 2001. And then that served as the basis for decision-making for what was, what is still today and will be, I think, for a long time, the most massive and ambitious construction program ever undertaken on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. Part of that was the result of the bond issue, of which UNC Chapel Hill got $500 million. Chancellor Meeser pledged to the voters, if they voted for the bond issue, that he would raise $2 for every one that the voters approved, and he did. And so consequently, we had a construction program that exceeded $1 billion that is in the process now of wrapping up, although I think you could say that the Keenan Stadium project, which is one of the most visible ones right now, is an example of a project undertaken consistent with that master plan and as part of that massive construction program.
Did that include the Horace Williams track in the plan, or did that intersected with it?
That was a separate effort, and of course I was deeply involved in that effort led by Jack Evans. And it was closely related, and the connection between those two is a couple of fold. One is that the same consultants that we had for the master plan, Ayers St. Gross of Baltimore, also were the primary consultants on the Horace Williams Carolina North master plan. So
this gets, I hate to interrupt the discussion of your retirement, but because it's so closely related to one of the questions, I guess, or concerns that I've got, just as an outside observer of things here in Chapel Hill, and particularly with respect to relationships between the university and the community. When about the time that you came back from Raleigh, the campus and the town were hard at it, seemingly. There were just a lot of misunderstandings, and there was sort of an adversarial feel to the relationships. Today, as you leave, or as you have left, while there are still matters of disagreement and different concerns, there is a spirit of much greater cooperativeness and a feeling of trust, mm-hmm. trustfulness. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not urging you to take full credit for that, but you observed this happening. How did it happen?
Well, I certainly wouldn't take full credit for it, although it was certainly one of the things that would have been in my job description. A lot of other people worked with me and alongside to help to make that happen. And a lot of that has to do with the chancellors that we've had, particularly James Meeser during his lengthy tenure and now Holden Thorpe, because I don't think any of them, either one of them and their predecessors, ever saw that the relationship with the town, between the town and the university, ought to be antagonistic.
Right. Nobody was looking for that.
Yeah. I used to say when I was mayor that I was mayor of one of those towns where the name of the town, University Town, was synonymous with the university that was in it. And if you think about Chapel Hill, people often refer to Chapel Hill or the university as basically a synonym. Same is true at Ann Arbor or Berkeley or Madison or places like that. And so Charlottesville, those were the kinds of places that that I think where the university and the town kind of grew up together and worked together. I think the problems that were encountered back in the time that you're talking about were occasioned in part because the university was beginning to kind of burst at the seams, literally, and push into some of the neighborhoods. For example, one of the things the master plan called for, one of the things the Chancellor Hooker wanted to do was to make it possible for more students to live on campus. And so consequently, a significant building program took place that resulted in a lot of conventional residence halls for undergraduates on the South Campus between the Smith Center and Keenan Stadium, and for student families along Mason Farm Road. Both of those projects really involved building university buildings closer to the neighbors than they had been in the past. And so we had to do a lot of discussion with the neighbors about how that could be done in a way that would be beneficial to them and at the same time benefit the university in a significant way. And I think the chancellors deserve a lot of credit for participating in that and for helping to make that happen.
Visiting with John House, former mayor and also recently retired as assistant to the special assistant to the Chancellor for Community Affairs. He and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is our former mayor of Chapel Hill, John Howes, just retired as special assistant to the Chancellor for Community Affairs. And John, I got you off. We're off track in terms of talking about your retirement. We're going to get back to that. And I interrupted you because of my interest, and I think everybody in Chapel Hill's interest in a good relationship between the university and the community. And that's kind of been one of your main responsibilities for the last 10 or so years. Right. And it's worked pretty well. So here, let me ask the question this way. I'm sure you're going to get called on by other universities similarly situated just to give advice about what are the rules that a university ought to sort of put in front of itself in terms of working to be have reasonable expectation of success in working with the community, and then if you're asked to consult with the community, what are some of the rules that the community should keep in mind, having worked now both from the university side and the town side? I'm a chancellor of another university. I'm saying I'm in terrible trouble with my community. What are some guidelines that you followed at Chapel Hill when you were so successful, you and your chancellors were so successful in developing good relationships?
Well, I think you have to start with a sense of openness and participation. And I can give you some examples of how that was manifested during the time that we were working on the master plan. And we learned a lot here from our consultants, Ayres St. Gross, who had just completed a master plan for the other university that claims to be the oldest public university in the country, that is the University of Georgia. And they had just completed a plan for that campus. And by the way, physically, it looks so much like Chapel Hill. If you look at a plan view of Athens and a plan view of Chapel Hill and of the two campuses, they're remarkably similar. And one of the striking things about that is the location of a major football stadium right in the middle of the campus. And that's true both at Georgia and at Carolina. But that's a diversion. Here's the point, that that the university and the town have a mutual stake in seeing that both prosper. The university has to grow and prosper as a seat of learning, and in order to do that, it does require new facilities, and it has had to build a number of those in the past few years. And because of that, and because the town does have formal legal jurisdiction over development on the campus, it's kind of a shared jurisdiction with the university's own board of trustees. Very interesting point in itself, because that's not true with every campus, but it's true here. You need to have a sense of collaboration and a sense of openness and transparency as you go about doing the planning. And so when we set up the master plan process, we set up a three-tiered committee structure in which in which there was a kind of a working group and another group that was more formally involved, like the chair of the Building and Grounds Committee of the university, chair of the planning board with the town, and trustees and the chancellor, and the mayor was also on that committee. And so
Excuse me for interrupting you, but I mean, the point that you're getting to is that even in internal planning for the university, you would urge another chancellor to bring in the townspeople early on in the planning process. That's not, in my mind, that's counterintuitive, because I want my first stab at this to be what serves the university. But you're saying, hey, put that aside for just a minute. In the long run, you better go ahead and get the views of your community well early on the planning process.
Well, you have to, because in the end, as I said, the university or the town does have legal zoning jurisdiction over the university. And in order for them to understand what's going on, it was really necessary to have them at the table.
To put an exclamation point on your point, early on in the process, when the town began to object to some of the university's plans, there was a stir to have the rules changed. And the state legislature, of course, which has a number of friends of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, to change the process so that the university would have total control over. Mm-hmm. That was one of the campus's early responses. And how did that response get changed?
Well, that was a trial balloon that was offered. Clearly, the town didn't like it. We did have some friends in the university or in the legislature who would have been willing to make that change. We had other people in our own legislative delegation who did not support that, and so there wasn't consensus in the General Assembly about doing that, and it did generate a fair amount of discussion in the university, and so the university backed away from that idea. I will say that as we've looked, and I've tried to, I did some years ago, try to look systematically at the relationship between major state universities and their host community to see what the practice was. And I would say that if you got a continuum from more regulation by the town to less or no, we're at the more regulation end of that continuum. And other campuses, like the University of Nebraska, for example, basically have no regulation at all. They can do whatever they want without getting any permission from the town. I don't favor one approach over the other. We have what we have here. It's not likely to change. And consequently, and we made the system work so the university could achieve its goals and I think at the same time meet the town's goals as well.
Well, that's, again, I was trying to frame your response in terms of advice to another chancellor. And your first advice is get your colleagues in the town, in the host town, involved in your planning processes early so you can develop this trust and diagnose or come to understand their side of problems that your development might mm-hmm. create. Now, what else would you tell them in terms, because we got a pretty healthy situation now, what else would you tell them in terms of maintaining this trustfulness, this good relationship?
Well, I'm a planner by training and experience, and I do think good planning is really critical. You've got to have a good comprehensive plan to guide development on a campus. If you assume that campuses are going to continue to grow and change, and certainly that's been true of the 200 plus years of history here, it is going to grow and change, the university is, you've got to have a plan to guide it. And we've been very fortunate here. One of the things that we did in our own master planning effort was go back and look at some of those early planning documents. And the people who guided the university in its very earliest days had a physical plan for the development of the campus. And the remnants of that plan are still visible today, including McCorkle Place and later on in another generation, Polk Place. So they're The rudiments were there for us to build around and to preserve.
Let me, you're a planner, put aside your planning cap for just a minute and put your community relations caps on. And what are the other kinds of things other than campus growth that might have a negative impact on the community? What other things do you work on? I think of things that happen, you know, the campus overflow, the behavior of students, the conflicting ideas about alcohol use, airports, other things. What other things come up that you would counsel people to work on and to be alert to, and how do you work those things out so that you develop a good spirit?
Well, it a lot of this takes place at levels that are not necessarily widely known in the public. You mentioned students, and certainly the presence of students here with their massive influx starting pretty soon here at this time of year will make a big difference in the life of this community. I was talking to a person this morning, in fact, at the Wellness Center, who was saying, you know, this is really a pretty nice town right now because
the students
aren't here. You can get around. And, you know, whenever anybody says that, I always remind them that for most of us, the reason that we're here is because the students are here. And that's true whether you work at the university or whether you are directly involved with it or not. It's a place of learning, and that's what attracts many people to come here.
Yeah, it's funny that you have different ideas about it. I'm kind of looking forward to when the students come back because the energy explodes
and the activities
on the campus.
But the point I was going to make is that, for example, our Office of Student Affairs, which has been ably led for many years by a number of vice chancellors, has excellent relationships with the town of Chapel Hill. The same is true of our University Department of Public Safety, which has a good working relationship with the Chapel Hill Police Department and the Chapel Hill Fire Department. So these people who are kind of down in the trenches in the sense that they work so closely together, it's not the kind of thing that draws headlines, but it's the kind of thing that certainly makes a difference in helping things function, whether it's planning for celebrations on Franklin Street after a major basketball victory, or just the routine handling of traffic 6 or 7 times a year when 60,000 people come to town to watch a football game. These are the kinds of things that go on all the time. They're the result of careful planning by the people who are directly involved, and they work very well.
So that if you've got a hand-in-glove operation at student affairs level with the people in town government and other town facilities, and then with law enforcement, you've got a working relationship. Same thing with fire department, with every other part of the town. These are the kinds of things that you would look at if you were asked to consult with another campus.
Indeed. And they have more or less formality depending on what the people feel they need, if they need a kind of a standing committee. The truth is that these people do get together with each other on a regular basis. They plan joint exercises together. And that's why things work as well as they do. And those are the kind of things that I would certainly advise any chancellor and mayor that their communities ought to do together, because they can do it far more effectively if they're talking to each other.
We're visiting with John Howes. We started talking about his retirement. I got him off track. We're going to get back on track after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking to our former mayor of Chapel Hill, the recently retired special assistant to the Chancellor for Community Affairs. Gosh, John, if we listed all the things that you've done in state government and town government on the campus at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, we didn't have time for you to talk. I got you off track on what you're doing in retirement by talking about the it's just a challenging and necessary part of a large campus in a small town or small city, how those entities work together positively. And during the time that you were there, the campus and the town seemed to work better and better and better. So I've enjoyed your ideas about how you might teach other campuses how to do the same thing.
Well, you also asked me what I would say to other chancellors, and I hope mayors as well. Dave Godshalk, my friend and colleague from the Department of City Regional Planning, are just now beginning a project to kind of draw together our experience, all the things that we learned in the process of preparing a campus master plan and then executing a huge major development program on the campus. The things that we learned, the things that that are significant about that, which we hope to publish and then can be shared with other university communities across
the country. So a history for us to remember how we got there, and then for others in terms of lessons learned, problems that we had and how we solved them might be helpful to others experiencing the same.
Yeah, so we're gonna work through these documents and try to pull something together in the next year.
Before we leave this, the remaining challenge, the Horace Williams property is a good example of how you can go from conflict into a reasonably collegial planning between campus and town. But nothing's really happened out there. What's the future of Horace Williams? The near future.
Yeah, the near future is really dependent on securing funding to allow the projects that the university already has planned to move forward out there, and that involves a major relocation of the law school, a joint project with a private developer of a incubator building, and all these things are kind of on hold pending the availability of funds. And that's something that will happen in due course.
It's related then to a revival of the economy.
Got
to get some private money and some state money, to do all of those things. In terms of the relationship between the campus and the town, are we now on track, do you think,
The town and the university are wholly in accord about their expectations regarding the Carolina North campus. And I think as that development proceeds out there, the community will feel good about the way the planning went, but they'll feel even better, I hope, about the kind of development that can take place there. And all that planning is still going on. Right now there's a campus-to-campus group that's working on a trail that would connect, that is a walking bicycle trail that would connect both the main campus.
Yeah, I'm interested in that personally. That's a great challenge because a big hill and a big traffic artery that I hope they'll avoid.
Yes, and there are three options that they've looked at. I think there's one that seems to be the preferred option. So I think we're all hoping that the discussions that ensue around that will lead us to something that can be done without a whole lot of additional expense, but certainly make it possible for people to get back and forth without having to get in their cars.
We're visiting with John Howes. He and I are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is John Howes, and we're visiting about all kinds of things. And you talked a little bit about your the effort that you and David Godshalk would do to share with us the results of the planning. So, can we now leave what this thing that you're going to share and get back to your retirement? Well, which we started out.
Dave and I will look forward to coming back and talking with you.
Yeah, we'll do that. That'll be great.
And we'll talk about that project. The other thing that that I've looked forward to spending some time on is our state parks in North Carolina. When I was at Diener, and I remember talking with Governor Hunt about it, when he asked me to take that job, I said, Governor, there's one thing I really personally would like to work on and focus on, and that is the condition of our state parks. And I won't go on about all the things that were problematic about it, the fact that we were spending so little on our state parks, and we still, you know, maintain these treasures like Mount Mitchell and Jockey's Ridge, seem to me to cry out for a far more systematic and concerted approach on the part of the state. Long and short of it is, the governor backed a bond issue in 1993, then supported the creation of a Parks and Recreation Trust Fund that was fully funded by 1995 and which has been operating ever since. After I left the secretary's job, the governor asked me to chair the board of the Parks and Recreation Authority. And so we've spent, I don't know how many million dollars, improving our state parks and also funding, helping local governments to fund their parks and recreation facilities. And it's worked out very well. And as I thought about that and thought about what we were able to accomplish, I'm going to have to
Jumping in, the kinds of things that have happened to state parks already as a result of those initiatives has just been a tremendous benefit to me personally in terms of the kinds of the pleasure of visiting state parks. Not we're not there yet, but boy, there's some really nice facilities.
They're very nice facilities, and they
and particularly compared to what it was before when you had great properties, but it was just hard to enjoy.
But they were largely inaccessible, and they're much more accessible now. And we've added some landmark parks at Chimney Rock and at Grandfather Mountain. I think these are really significant achievements. And I was moved as I watched Ken Burns' documentary on the national parks, which he called America's Best Idea. And I thought, you know, we've got a pretty good idea here. And we ought to chronicle that. So I'm one of the things I want to do is to figure out how, I don't know whether we want to get Ken Burns or not, but how we can help people understand the role that state parks play in the preservation of the landscape in our country, in our state, and the recreational opportunities that they offer to people, the learning opportunities that they offer to people, and help them appreciate even more what magnificence we have in our trust. So I'm going to be doing a first-year seminar in the spring semester in which I'm going to work with a group of eager young students, I hope, looking at the state environmental policy and the way in which the state park program contributes to a broad-gauged state environmental policy. It looks like it's something that will help to begin to get systematically in mind what we're doing here, and then maybe we can get Ken Burns or somebody to come and help us do a film
about
what that would be.
Well, what a great thing for you, John, having been drug out of the classroom to serve the state and then the campus for so many years now in retirement to get to go back to your old job of teaching a class.
Well, I'm
and having the joy of of the interaction with young people.
Yeah, I tried to stay involved with students throughout. It was impossible to do while I was working in Raleigh, but even after I came back and was working basically full time in the chancellor's office, I did continue to teach. And as you know, I taught with Rachel Willis, a course that she inspired on the role of the university in American life. And she and I taught that several times over the last several years and had a wonderful time with that. That was a upper-level course for juniors and seniors. And my goodness, we've trained every, I think, student body president for the last 6 or 8 years in that course and helped them understand and appreciate not only what their university does, but how the University of North Carolina fits into the overall fabric of higher education in the United States.
We're visiting with Jonathan Howes, and who's recently retired as Special Assistant to the Chancellor for Community Affairs. Jonathan, you've been very generous in talking about some of the professional responsibilities that you've had and what you've learned and what you've shared with the rest of us about that. Now, you have a number of interests. You and your wife, Mary, have always been interested in travel, and it's hard to see how you can break away and do even more traveling in retirement, but I bet you got some plans.
Well, we do. And in fact, one thing we did this summer, we have taken each of our eight grandchildren on a trip, a special trip with us, that is Mary and me, and our grandchild and their parent, our child. So the party of four. We started this, I think it was 10 years ago, where we took our oldest grandchild to London and Paris and gave her a kind of an exposure to the big cities of Europe. And then since then have worked our way through our eight grandchildren to the youngest one this summer. And we recently returned from a trip where we took her and her mother, our daughter Betsy, to Venice, where we boarded a very large Italian cruise ship, the Serena, and sailed around to Istanbul and stopped along the way in Olympia in Greece and Ephesus and Izmir in Turkey and Dubrovnik in Croatia and Istanbul itself, and then spent a few more days in Venice and had a wonderful time exposing this 11-year-old granddaughter to another part of the world, which in many respects is the root of our civilization. And she had a wonderful time, and so did we. So we've now gotten through all eight of our grandchildren. They'd like to recycle and start all over again. I don't know that we're going to do that, but and we're certainly not going to feel bound by the school schedule, which we certainly have been, because that's when kids can travel. But I think it's been beneficial for us, and it's certainly been beneficial for the kids.
I want to exploit, we've just got a few more minutes, but speaking of travel, one of the things that has impressed me about your and Mary's lives has been not only your ability to and to plan and execute travel outside the United States, but your systematic enjoyment of the resources available to all of us in Chapel Hill, where we don't have to pay for the cruise ship. And one of the things that has been y'all's attachment to, for instance, to the North Carolina Botanical Garden, and I remember going a couple of times with you on hikes that were even more valuable than a Mediterranean cruise. Speaking of giving advice, what kinds of things do you think that many people in Chapel Hill miss that are available that you and Mary exploit that are just here for us for the taking in Chapel Hill, like the Botanical Garden?
Well, the Botanical Garden certainly would be at the top of my list. I've had the good fortune to be involved with the Botanical Garden. I was a member of their administrative board way back when. And Mary, one of the reasons we've traveled so much is because she's a travel agent, or was, before she retired. And one of her principal clients was the Botanical Garden, and she helped Ken Moore at the garden arrange for I don't know how many trips to Europe to look at some of the classical gardens over there, and increasingly to look at the natural landscapes, which was really a greater interest to me. And we did an awful lot of that in Scotland and other places in the UK. But the natural landscapes around here are true treasures, and you don't have to go far to enjoy them. The Botanical Garden itself is certainly a good place and a special place, even more now because of the new environmental education center.
New buildings, but the trails you took us on are still there, and that's like a trip to the mountains.
It is indeed like a trip to the mountains, and it's a very special place to go. You can... right here in Orange County is Okanichi Mountain, which is a part of our state park system. It's the highest point in Orange County, but it certainly is accessible.
It's accessible, a little bit tricky to get to, but it's worth it.
It's worth getting there. Not hard to find.
Once you just got to drive on.
That's right.
And drive up so you can walk to the top.
And the same way with the Eno River State Park. Jordan Lake, if you like flat water recreation, they've got trails around there. The North Carolina Forest Service operates a talking trees trail on the edge of Jordan Lake, and you can walk around there, and the trees will talk to you and tell you what they're good for, which is a lot of fun, especially with young children. So There are really countless opportunities around here, and there are going to be more. Hall River State Park is another one that we'll be developing here shortly, and we're going to have even more resources. And the county has been critical to that as well. So there are a lot of things. There's a book called Trails of the Triangle that was done by Alan DeHart, who's the trail master of North Carolina.
Of all of North Carolina, yeah.
And Trails of the Triangle is a good little paperback book to pick up. And I remember giving one of those to Governor Perdue, and she and Bob Eaves have gone out any number of times on the spur of the moment, just taking walks in those places that Alan has identified. And that's the basic source that we use as well.
Well, all that's great advice. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for what you've done for us in your career in public service on the campus, at the state, and in the town, and for sharing with us some of the things that you will be doing in retirement. Our guest has been Jonathan Howes. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back here on Who's Talking soon.